guys, and welcome to another episode of the Collapsing Game Shelf Podcast. A group of very interesting interviewers with way too many board games. Today, it is just me. It's just Adam, guys. And I thought I would do something a little different. I know you've heard us do a couple interviews before, and to be honest with you, I really enjoy interviewing, especially people involved in the board gaming industry or looking to get in towards the board game industry. And I'm sitting down, across countries and across borders. Thank you, COVID, with a good friend of mine, Santiago Acosta, also known online as Fluffy Crazy String. Santiago, how you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good, Adam. Just staying home, trying to stay safe, belly filled with nachos. It's great.
Hey man, life is good. That's awesome. So I mean, you're healthy, you're safe, your family's doing all right in this COVID-19 world that we happen to find ourselves living in.
Yeah, everyone's pretty chill. My dad's still working, so that's good, and I'm trying to do everything I can to help them out as well as help myself. So yeah, everyone's pretty chill so far, and we're hoping to keep it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. So you guys are in the kind of southeastern states, right? We don't need to be specific here, but
yeah, we're probably more south we're probably like not as most east as you can get, but we're pretty as south as you can get in the Americas. Yeah,
it's good to hear that, you know, you're at least safe and your family is safe in this particular instance. Now, I mean, in all honesty, the reason that I was hoping to and lucky enough to get into contact with you is that you have a very interesting position, is that in that you are aspiring and working on breaking into the board gaming market as an artist, as a graphic designer.
Yeah, that's true. I'm trying to make my way into the board gaming industry as just an artist. And right now I had an idea to just make miniatures, probably not miniatures that you're used to seeing, at least from what I've seen based on my research, but that's kind of where it's starting right now. Yeah,
that's very cool. What are you comfortable sharing with us about these miniatures?
They're definitely going to be all kinds of different designs, mostly because they're pixel art.
Okay.
Because I aspired to do pixel art. It started with video games, wanting to make video games. But then I transferred those skills, and with my newfound love of board games, and just kind of delving into that rabbit hole, I figured maybe I can transfer those skills instead of for video games, that I can transfer them into making board games. So yeah,
that's so cool. I love it. I love it. I always get excited when I happen to bump into you in the Twitch space. That's where you and I first kind of came into contact with each other. And it's not long that anybody realistically spends within at least my Twitch space where board gaming doesn't come up a little bit, at least in conversation. And when I started talking about board games and you're like, hey, you know, I'm trying to work and get into that space. Like, I knew right away. I was like, man, I got to talk to this guy. Like, he has a passion. I have a passion. And it's so awesome when those kind of passions intersect, I suppose, and really just find that sweet spot. Like, it's so good. So I do have a question for you. Why board gaming, and why, like, I guess this is a handful of questions, but we can piecemeal them out as much as we can. So first of all, why board games and not video games? Like what is it about board games that drives you to pursue that?
Well, it kind of all started with me just like trying to figure out what I want to do. And I was immediately, I was like all for like gung ho, like because I love video games. That's like most of my time is spent playing video games when I'm not working or doing art. That's kind of like my go-to relaxation. And, you know, I always thinking about mechanics and like storytelling and all that. But when it basically went from video games, because I tried to make a video game and then that ultimately failed. And I tried to, I was just trying to figure out what else to do. And me and my friends decided, oh, let's, you know, let's do, let's have a D&D session together over Roll20 because of COVID and everything.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
Trying to hang out. And I decided, you know, well, what, let's get some like little icons or something so that we have something to represent our characters. And since I was so well versed in making pixel art and I wanted to practice more and do more with it, I decided to make all of our characters in like a pixel art 32 by 32 format. And everyone was so happy. Like they got all excited. Like, oh my God, this is so cool. And that kind of gave me the idea that like, hey, I could make a living off of this. And
yeah.
I love board games. Like I've always loved board games, but not to the extent that I am right now. Cause like I would look into board games. I'd always go to card shops and see these different board games. Me and my friends would all hang out. Like one of the first board games I ever bought myself was King of Tokyo. And that nice. Was like, very much loved that board game. It's one of my favorite, competitive ones. And it just evolved from that. Just like looking into more board games, talking with more people. So, and to be like 100% honest,
yeah,
board games versus video games. Board games require a whole lot less animation. So,
okay, no, that's fair.
And I'm not an animator in any sense of the word. So, like maybe eventually, but right now it's like, you know, board games is something I do like and it's definitely growing on me. So, yeah, it's kind of that's one of the big reasons why board games versus video games, because they're similar, but they're definitely two different things in their own right. So
absolutely. Hey man, no, I dig it. I totally feel that. So this all really stemmed from D&D then.
Pretty much, yeah.
Man, that's so cool. And would you say that your particular like your individual style is mostly leaning towards like the 8-bit kind of pixel art style or what?
My style is pixel art. Of course, I do traditional art as well, but pixel art is very, very inexpensive to get into, and it's just super fun and different. Because, and especially now, since everyone's so excited, like retro video games have become its own art form. Mm-hmm. It's no longer just like, you know, because it's such a nostalgic feeling when you think of old games like the old Legend of Zelda, old Final Fantasy games, Mario, you know, you get that nostalgic feeling. I have all kinds of different styles when it comes to pixel art, because I'll use all kinds of different resolutions that so I'm not just pertained to one, which is why this market for me works, because I can just work on stuff forever. Like that's really good. It keeps me busy. So
hell yeah, that's super cool. So you said the King of Tokyo there is one of your favorite competitive games. So what would you say is your favorite board game overall?
My favorite board game overall
right now, because like obviously people's tastes tend to change and like they ebb and flow, and like one day you're really feeling one thing and the next day you're feeling another thing. But if you were to sit down, sure. And let's say for example, let's say that the CGS crew all got together with you and we were all together right now, COVID free, of course, socially distanced. And we could all sit down and play a board game together as a cohesive unit. And we're like, you know, Santiago, like we want to play your go-to, like your number one right now. What would we be playing?
It's definitely a tie between Betrayal at House on the Hill and Power Rangers Heroes of the Grid. And it's not because of mechanics or anything, because I like the mechanics of Betrayal at House on the Hill, like especially that there's so much randomness to it, and that like if you play it and then you were to play it again, it's not going to be the same game like at all. It's like the mechanics are the same with Betrayal at House on the Hill. The mechanics are the same, but what happens is completely different. And I really like that aspect of replayability, that like even though I'm showing you this game, it's going to be a completely different experience from the other times that I've played the game, you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
And then Power Rangers, I mean, I've grown up with Power Rangers. I'm a huge Power Rangers fan, and when I heard that they were making this board game, I immediately jumped out of my chair and was like, how do I buy it? Where do I get it? And when I got it, like, I'm a big fan of like quality and like organization, and that board game like does it, like it had like the pieces are like, they feel really nice. I mean, for a $90 board game, I hope the pieces feel nice.
Totally.
So, yeah. And there's just like the visuals are always like a big thing for me. And it's just like the board game looks nice. It looks fun. It looks, you know, there's so many different components, and the team aspect of it is just really, really fun. And like, those are like my two main ones. I like, it's usually a tie between those two.
Hey man, that's cool. Yeah. So far, of course. And I mean, like the best part about it is like, is again, I think that board gaming, and I've always said this, and I've said this to many different people, and on a few separate episodes of this podcast, I've said that like in the last 5 years, just the kind of the paradigm shift that has happened here, where people are starting to move away from video games again, and like this resurgence of board games. It's so interesting to see how society changes, I suppose, but things, it feels like things are cyclical, you know what I mean? Like it seems like what's old is new again, and that's starting to become more and more true within the hobby gaming space. So in the last 5 years, at least, I would say that there's been this massive surge in people starting to move back into board gaming spaces. We've seen stuff like board gaming cafes coming back and all kinds of stuff like that. I was wondering what your take was on like, why do you think that is? Like why is there this resurgence back into the world of board gaming? Why are people moving away from video games to an extent? Obviously, video games are more popular than they ever have been, but you're also seeing a lot of people, especially, you know, some people of the older generations, AKA like my age of 37, and people in and around my age, but that's not even true. Like there are people all through all age ranges here that are starting to go back into tabletop board gaming. Like what's your take on that? What do you think? Why do you think that is?
I definitely think it has to do with just that generation of people getting older. Because with me, I mean, I didn't play board games until just recently. A couple of years ago, I started getting into board games, and that stemmed from just like wanting to play card games again, because I used to play a lot of Yu-Gi-Oh! And when we would go to like, you know, the card shops, and we'd see these board games, and we were like, oh, these are really cool. Maybe we should pick one up at some point. And it's just like as the older generation gets to like, you know, gets older, and you start to see more of those businesses, people wanting to open up more businesses than board games. And then, or like you have parents who grew up with board games, like teaching them, their kids how to play board games and stuff. So I feel like it's just like the people who were fans of it are now able to, I guess, provide and show the younger generation and other people the beauty that is board games, whereas we didn't have as much of a chance doing that, because right now we're getting like, we had like that huge craze of like video games and the like console wars and all that. And I feel like as people get older, they have more of an opportunity to show people now like that, you know, video games aren't just the only thing. And it's interesting too, because people are even making video games into board games, which I find very interesting, which kind of pulls people in. How was Fallout turned into a board game? Like, what?
Dude, man, I feel that. Oh, I so feel that, dude. Yeah, man, there's like, man, there's a couple things you said there that I'm like, I'm so wanting to like touch on here. Like number one, when you say like taking video games and turning them into board games, I mean, we just recently on the podcast, like we recently reviewed This War of Mine, which is a video game that got turned into a board game. Dark Souls has been turned into a board game. Bloodborne has been turned into a board game. Fallout. The list goes on and on and on. There's so many. And like the production value is so good right now. I think that's so crazy to think that, yeah, like things are starting to shift back to another another side of it. It's wild right now. It's wild. And then the other thing to kind of say to that is that, I mean, you're seeing a lot of board games that are being brought into digital spaces, which I also think is good, especially right now. Of course, we're dealing with coronavirus, COVID-19, whatever you want to call it. And people can't physically sit around a table with each other like we used to, and can't sit here and play board games, but we can still do it via the power of the internet and that sort of stuff. And for example, you and I, Santiago, we've played a game of Sagrada over the internet, right? With you being down in the States and myself being up here in Canada, and it worked. It went off without a hitch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah, seeing video game adaptations of board games is very interesting. Because the beauty about board games, for me at least, is that you don't actually have to play the rules that the board game has. Like, you can make up house rules as long as everyone agrees, right? You can kind of like make up little house rules that, like, if you don't agree with a rule, mm-hmm. right, you could always change it. Whereas if you kind of translate that into a video game, you can't really do, because the video game won't let you, kind of sure. a thing.
So sure.
It's very restricting, but it's still really cool, because like in our case, like, because I would love to play the board games that I have here at home with people that I have made connections with online. But I mean, you being in Canada and me being in the United States, that's only going to happen maybe a couple times a year, you know? So
yeah, if we're lucky. Yeah.
If you're lucky, exactly. So to have that kind of digital version of it, so that I can actually play these games, like with the friends that I have overseas or across the States, I mean, it's really nice, because I mean, these board games, it's also a really cool like way to even try out a board game, which is what I always do. I'll get it on Tabletop Simulator first, and then try it out with friends and see if I like it. I'm like, all right, I like this board game. Yeah, it looked cool when I saw it played and read the reviews. So I actually tried it out. I like it. I'm going to buy it. And board games ain't cheap, you know? So
no, they're not. No.
They're expensive. And to actually have a way to kind of test it out before I pick it up is very, very nice. And to be able to play with people from across the world, not so necessarily next to me, which I prefer. But I mean, if I can play the board game with people that I like, I'm not going to complain too much. So
sure. Like I definitely think that, at least like myself, and I'm going to kind of speak on behalf of the rest of the podcast crew here, in that, I mean, we definitely see board gaming as a bit of a social event, right? Like it's just a way for us to spend time together as a group of friends or, you know, new friends, old friends, whatever, and get to know people and just get to sit around and kind of shoot the shit with each other. You know, Hey, how was the week? How are the kids? Blah, 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 blah. By the way, you know, like playing King of Tokyo or something, by the way, take 3 points of damage, you know, or give up Tokyo. I mean, really, it's your choice, but that's right. Yeah. Like I totally get you. So, I mean, I was definitely going to ask you if you'd had an opportunity to try out Tabletop Sim and how you feel, like what your thoughts are of Tabletop Sim versus a real tabletop.
It's definitely more intimate when you're like with people like IRL across the table and like rolling dice, and the energy's there. Like everybody's there, like rolling dice, you know, like you said, shooting the shit, talking about whatever, talking about like their lives, how their week went. And it's like to have that, because when you're with people, there's more of an energy, right? So it feels like more of a party kind of thing. And it's almost simulated the same way in Tabletop Simulator. But there's definitely a disconnect, at least from what I've experienced, because I've played Tabletop Simulator with my D&D group and with other people like Matt and all of them. We've all played Tabletop Simulator. But the issue with Tabletop Simulator is that if you don't know how to work like the dice or the cards or anything, there's a little bit of aggravation there, because it's like, I just want the card, because it's not coded perfectly.
Sure.
But I mean, it's good enough to the point where I can play all these board games with my friends from across the world. But you know, when you're just, cause it's like learning to play the game, learning how to play Tabletop Simulator and learning how to play a board game, can get a little infuriating. And I've had conversations with people about this dozens of times, but when you're teaching somebody a board game in person, I mean, they know how to roll dice, they know how to draw cards, they, you know, like that's basic human functions. So like at that point, they're just learning how to play the game. So unless you find people who are well versed or in Tabletop Simulator, and all they have to do is play the games and learn how to play the game, it's definitely better. But I definitely prefer like in real life interactions, because there's definitely more of an energy there. You know, when you can see your friends' faces and, you know, joke around and whatnot, you know, just eating, you know, eating food or drinking your drinks, like it's definitely a much better time. But what I'm left with is not a bad thing whatsoever. You know, it's a decent substitute for sure.
Sure. I mean, given the times, right? Like, and given the situation that we all find ourselves in, I mean, I 100% am on board with what you're saying there. And I have, again, that's another thing that I have strongly, like, you know, stamped my feet and jumped up on my soapbox and like sounded from the heavens kind of thing, is that like Tabletop Simulator is great, but it does not replace the real thing. Like, I would much rather be sitting across the table from someone, like you said, rolling the dice, drawing the cards. Board gaming, at least for me anyways, is a very tactile thing. And I like to be able to manipulate, you know, pick up a pawn and move it around a board or whatever that happens to look like. Mm-hmm. So you say that you've just kind of in the last couple years really kind of found yourself getting into board games and that kind of jazz. So you've noticed, because at least I've noticed it, Kickstarter seems to be a really big thing, and some of the biggest Kickstarters, like a lot of the highest grossing Kickstarters, almost all of them, in fact, almost all of the highest grossing Kickstarters ever are all board game related. What are your thoughts on Kickstarter as a medium for board gaming, for like selling board games and that kind of jazz?
I definitely think it's really cool. I mean, being able to have that kind of support, that large support from people. I mean, I've definitely thrown money at Kickstarters before, the Power Rangers board game being one of them.
Okay.
And like, it's definitely cool. It's just really a shame, because if you don't, my issue with it is that people will have like those Kickstarter rewards that those Kickstarter backers will only get, and it's like, what if I wanted that, you know, and then I wasn't fast enough to throw money at it, you know? It's like, you really have to be like kind of on your toes about that kind of stuff, because you could really miss out on some really cool rewards that you'll never be able to see unless they decide to release it as a separate kind of purchase. So, I mean, it's great. It's just one of those things you have to keep track of, like, otherwise you're not going to be able to get all the cool stuff that all these other people are getting. So, but other than that, I feel like it's a really good service.
Do you feel that that's fair? I suppose. Do you feel that, like, you know, people being able to have Kickstarter backer rewards where it's like, look, this is going to be exclusive only to the Kickstarter thing. Like, do you think that that's something, do you feel that that's just, I suppose?
It kind of depends on how you kind of handle it, right? Because it's like, you know, people will pour in a ton of money into Kickstarter to get these like super high tier rewards. So it's like, and it's the tiers can go on to, I don't, it's like you don't even know, like freaking, it depends on the Kickstarter, of course. And it's like, you know, they'll spend hundreds of dollars just to get like a very specific item. Right. So it's like, to me, it's a version of fair that I feel like is kind of justified, just because if I'm going to be spending $500 for your board game to, you know, make enough money to be distributed and stuff, then I would like you know, maybe I would like something in return. But at the same time, it's like, it's one of those things where, like, if I'm donating money, I shouldn't be expecting anything in return. It's like, you should just support businesses for the sake of supporting businesses. There shouldn't be any, I gave you this, you have to give me something in return. There shouldn't be any of that. But it's nice that companies do that. They're like, hey, you spent all this money, I'm going to give you something in return. I'm going to give you a little reward, you know, for giving us this dream, for supporting our dreams and supporting our business. I'm going to give you a little something in return. So it's nice on both parts. But when people kind of expect it, like, oh, I'm spending $1,000 for your company, you have to give me something, then it's like, it's like Kickstarter is technically a donation. There isn't supposed to be any back and forth. It's, you know, but there is back and forth because those companies are so generous that they create items for people, that they're only that person's going to get because they spent so much money. I mean, there are Kickstarters where backers spend like over $1,000 and then they get a tour of the whole vicinity. Mm-hmm. They get like flown out and everything. They get a picture with the whole team. And it's like, it's really cool. And that, you know, you can't replicate that, of course. I mean, you can't just like sell that on a shelf.
Sure.
But there are other things like, oh, like an exclusive miniature that only you're going to get, or like an exclusive, you know, t-shirts or like whatever. But like, if it's a component in the game, that's, you know, that completely changes the game. And I'm going to keep using Power Rangers as an example, because absolutely, I've been backing that forever. And there are things on there that I wish I could have gotten, but I didn't get the chance to, because I didn't have the funds, and I didn't even know about it when the fundraiser was going on. So, you know, there, it's like, they'll give people like certain miniatures or certain pieces that, you know, that they won't even sell because, you know, those are Kickstarter rewards. They're not for they weren't for distribution. And it's like, well, I mean, those are really cool things that I would have wanted, but only some of it is being sold as expansions, while the others are like left to question, like, why can't I play as the Green Ranger? Like, why can't I play as the White Ranger until they decide, oh, here's an expansion for that, you know, for that. It's like, oh, okay, but these people get to play it sooner because they were fast enough to pay the donation goal to get the thing that they wanted, I guess. So, yeah.
So to like, yeah, to kind of front it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what do you I don't actually know who produced the Power Rangers board game. I was actually going to look that up while we were chatting, but
that would be Renegade Studios.
Oh, they're pretty damn big. Mm-hmm. So I guess another thing, and I've asked a ton of people this, and I've got some very interesting responses, which is why I continue to ask this question. But for guys like I'm looking, as an example, I'm looking on Kickstarter right now, and Kickstarter right now, there's 20 hours, so less than one day left on a very little, an unknown board game that nobody probably cares about. It's called Frosthaven, and it's the sequel to this other game that I'm sure nobody cares about called Gloomhaven. I mean, it's only been number one on the Board Game Geek list for, I don't know, ever, since it came out in 2017. But like, for example, Isaac Childress, which I have all respect in the world for Isaac Childress, and I don't want anybody listening to take that into question. Like, I have the most respect for Isaac Childress and for Cephalofair Games. But they're using Kickstarter again to put out Frosthaven, which is the sequel or like the version 2.0, the next game in the Gloomhaven line. They set up a funding goal of $500,000, which, I mean, it's a lot of money, but it's very reasonable, especially for anyone who's played Gloomhaven, just to understand that, like, the base game alone, just in cardboard without any sort of organizer or anything like added or removed from it, like, the box shows up on your door, it's 21 pounds, and that's a fact. So it's 21 pounds worth of board game. So I can understand why. I mean, it would probably cost quite a bit to produce. But I mean, they set this goal for 500,000, and I'm currently looking at it right now. And I mean, first of all, they blew past their first million within like 12 hours. You know what I mean? They were funded in about 32 seconds, and they're sitting here, and I'm looking at it right now with 20 hours left to go. They've just crossed $11 million. $11 million raised. US. This is all US funds, by the way.
Right.
So like, do you think that some of these bigger these like bigger cats, guys like Cool Mini or not, guys like Cephalofair Games, who, I mean, I'm not saying that they do or don't have a large bankroll, but I mean, it's okay. I'm going to say that Cool Mini or not probably has a pretty respectable bankroll. Like, they're probably sitting on a decent cushion doing stuff like Zombicide and all these other big name productions. But like, do you feel that it's fair to the smaller studios, the guys who are now, and again, this is probably to get me in a ton of shit, but I'm going to say it anyways, like the guys who are actually using Kickstarter for its intended purpose of funding a dream, as opposed to maybe guys like Isaac Childress, for example, again, all respect to him, but who are maybe using Kickstarter more as like a pre-selling service?
I mean, it's not fair in any sense of the word, but like, it's not fair, like morally, it's not fair because it's, you know, Kickstarter was meant to help small businesses climb to where they want to be, right? Whereas with big businesses, like large businesses, you know, they can throw out any product that they think would fund a lot of money. And then when they don't necessarily need to expend that money, that's not how I want to say it.
That's fine.
But yeah, it was, they basically just go in and they just kind of abuse the system. Right. But I mean, if Kickstarter lets them, because Kickstarter is open to everybody, I mean, why not use it? It's a very, to me, it feels viable. Like, ethically, it's fine, because if Kickstarter lets anybody enter any kind of product in there to make money, then it's a decent business tactic to, oh, here, let me get this funded by a bunch of people. And then, you know, I make money on top of it. Right. So it works in that sense, but morally, it's like, I mean, you're kind of just taking people's money without, you know, without really needing to. But I mean, that's just business, I guess. It's, you know, so
that's a great answer. Like, that's so well thought out. I like it. I like it. I like it a lot. So like, Santiago, coming back to your digital pixel art style business that you're kind of kicking off here, what's the next step? Where are you headed with this?
Well, right now, I'm kind of just making like the bulk of the miniatures that I want to make, right? Because that's the ultimate goal, is to just open the business and like start selling these miniatures and designing them in the form that I want. So right now I'm just kind of working on the first line of miniatures for people to buy, so that I can set up the website and kind of just figure out what I want to do with the marketing and all that. So right now it's just to get the first line out there and then work on every other line after that, and then eventually come out with my own fully realized board game on top of that. So I mean, I have a lot of ideas, but definitely executing them is a process. So right now I'm just kind of focused on the first line, the first wave of miniatures, and then opening up that business so that I start making some traction and then work from there.
What about Kickstarter? Have you ever thought about maybe going on Kickstarter with your line?
Yeah, that's definitely something I've been looking to do. I've been wanting to see how I want to make them, because I've been testing out a bunch of different kinds of stuff, looking into different kinds of materials, cardstock, was that poly resin stuff?
Okay, yeah.
Seeing if I want to go with like plastic or cardboard, see what kind of works best and what's most cost effective. and in terms of like mass producing them by myself.
Like a one-man show kind of thing. I gotcha.
Yeah, until I can, you know, have the funds to hire people. That's kind of, you know, once I have something to show, I'll eventually probably go to Kickstarter and work that train. So
nice. Well, I definitely hope that you'll like at least let us at the podcast know when that train is ready to kind of leave the station and head out, so that we can try and, well, we'll probably have you back on again, to be honest with you. Like we'll do like another interview or something when your Kickstarter is ready to go, and we can chat from there.
Right. Yeah. I'm definitely looking forward to that, because once all this finally like takes off, I mean, it's just really full speed ahead from there.
That's cool, man. Like I totally dig that you kind of you can obviously tell that you have a direction. Like you have like a, hey, this is where I want to go. This is what I want to do. And I think that that's so much of the battle with a lot of folks that are out there. Maybe they're kind of thinking about, hey, maybe I want to make art for board games. Maybe I want to make a board game. Maybe I'm more interested in designing the mechanics and the rules and that sort of stuff. But so many people kind of get lost in the not being focused enough on just being like, look, this is exactly what I want to do. This is exactly how I'm going to do it. Bada boom, bada bing, here we go.
Yeah, it's definitely, for something like creating a business, it's good to have a plan and writing stuff out. It's just about kind of how you're going to execute those plans and how effective you are on being proactive in executing those plans. And I think it's just very important, because, you know, you got to have that drive and you have to have that passion in order to do anything art-wise. You know, it's like you can't kind of like half-ass anything. You kind of have to full-ass everything, you know, like you got to put your 100% in it. And I'm definitely in a better position now. Like, to me, COVID was it was kind of like a blessing in disguise, because I mean, I can't really work, so, you know, working in a regular job, so I have this time and to actually move forward with my plans. And I'm not saying that COVID is a good thing.
No.
But because they're definitely family suffering and stuff. But, you know, for me, it was just like, well, you know, because I didn't like my job to begin with, like my day job. I, you know, very long hours of just standing in front of a kiosk and asking people if they want to buy a satellite TV, and it's like, no. Like I did it because I had to pay bills and make money, but right now I'm in a position where, you know, I'm with my family and everyone's healthy, and I can focus on my projects and, you know, hopefully push that into a direction and that I want it to be by the end of this, so that I can start gaining traction and stuff. So yeah.
Oh man, that's awesome. Yeah, no, I know where you're coming from. Like by no means does anybody, I can't see anybody in the world who's actually sitting here and saying, yeah, COVID-19 was really good. Those people are fucking crazy. But for me in particular, like I just recently finished a round of post-secondary schooling. I got through all my classes, thankfully, even through kind of having our semester interrupted by COVID and having to go from being in classes to being online classes. But my, at least for me, my like summer job that I had kind of lined up with one of the companies within the field that I'm going to college for is that summer job kind of got nixed on me because, well, nobody's working in the office, right? Like offices aren't open, anything like that. So I definitely understand. I mean, basically I've kind of resigned at this point to doing, until September anyways, that I'll be doing, full-time content creation, which again is something that I have a mad passion about. It allows me the opportunity to sit down and talk with you. It allows me to focus more on like my Twitch channel and building up a YouTube repository and that sort of stuff. So I definitely feel you when you say that it is in a way a blessing in disguise.
Yeah. And yeah, like it's definitely really cool. Like it's, cause I would never have this chance otherwise. Cause of course I'd be going to work doing the brutal hours and going through the grind and trying to find a time to even do any kind of art, hopefully even just one, like pump out one piece. So, you know, COVID to me, like, is just like a great opportunity. Like, cause you could sit at home and just kind of just be upset that you can't go out and do stuff, or you can, you know, take the opportunity to maybe learn a new skill or pick up a new hobby, you know, with all the free time. Because there's a lot of people who just kind of just sit down and just kind of be like, dang, I can't go out with my friends or do stuff. So they just sit at home all day and just watch like Netflix or, you know, whatever, they browse the internet or something. It's like, you know, you kind of, you know, take what you can get, because like now you have all this free time. I mean, and those people who do it, I mean, it's not wrong to do it, you know, like, because, you know, you deserve to relax out of all the chaos and craziness that's happened. But, you know, like, if you're sitting there just saying, I'm bored and I have nothing to do, well, I mean, pick up a new hobby, you know, do a project that you might have been putting off for weeks on end because you were too busy with work and kids or whatnot, you know, like kind of take the opportunities that are given to you and try to turn it from a negative to a positive kind of thing.
Absolutely, man. I'm all on board with that. I am so on board with that. Okay, Santiago, I think that's probably about all I have for you at this particular moment. Man, I cannot say thank you enough. It was super cool being able to sit down and talk with another person who is super passionate about board gaming, who is coming at it from a different viewpoint, you know, coming at it from a point of artistic design, and obviously you have like this super cool, you have this super cool idea going on, and you have a plan, which is obviously the coolest shit ever. Where can people find your stuff?
Currently, I've been posting a lot on Instagram and Twitter. So I'm on Instagram at Fluffy Crazy Strings. And then on Twitter, it's at F Crazy Strings. And if you ever want to see me actually in the process of making the miniatures, you can find me at twitch.tv/FluffyCrazyStrings.
That's dope, dude. I love it. Man, guys, thank you so much for taking some time and checking out this podcast episode. If you're looking to get a hold of the podcast, there's a handful of ways you can do that. You can catch up with us on Twitter at CGS Podcast, or you can email us collapsinggameshelf@gmail.com. For me personally, I am at For The Win on all social medias, FORTHEWHYN. Also on Twitch, twitch.tv/ForTheWin. You might even see Fluffy, or you might see me in Fluffy's channel, Fluffy in my channel. We tend to hang out a little bit here and there. If you're trying to get a hold of any of the other members of the CGS podcast team, Tom is at Team Rage Tom. Justin is at Don't Trust Justin. And Debbie is at Mrs. Wynn. That's MRSWHYN. Guys, thank you so much for being here and checking this out. We will see you all again next week with another episode of The Collapsing Game Shelf. Santiago, man, thank you again. We'll catch up with you again when we get when you get that Kickstarter ready to go.
Yes, sir. Thank you again. Thank you for having me. It was really fun. I never had the chance to do anything like this, so it's really, really cool.
Nice, dude. Nice. All right. Bye, guys.